My advice for entrepreneurs is definitely to level up with Shopify. The platform is just never a worry. Like, I have so many worries, but the platform is never one. I feel like Shopify really thinks about how they can optimize. It just always feels very ahead of the curve. Everything is just super easy to connect and link. They really know what we need. Time and money that is saved, I can spend on other things and on growth.
Start your free trial at shopify.com.
Hey friends, it's Ian from TV's The Recovering Gleek, Ugly podcast. When Lena and I first decided to make this podcast, we quickly realized we had literally zero idea of how to make that happen. Thankfully, a friend of ours recommended the podcasting platform Anchor. Anchor is free. It has all of the tools you need to record and edit your podcast from your phone or computer. You can even add songs from Spotify into it. And the absolute most amazing thing about Anchor is that they will distribute your podcast for you. So anywhere that you listen to Recovering Gleek, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever weird third-party app you're using, it is there because Anchor put it there. And the icing on the cake is that you can make money from your podcast through Anchor with no minimum listenership. All you have to do is record an ad, which is why I am recording an ad right now, because I want money very badly. It is everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
What do we talk about for our intro?
I don't know. I could do my epic rap battle of history rap.
Do it. Do it right now, please.
No.
No!
I could do a bit of it. Fine. I'll just do a bit of it.
Okay.
If you've been, I mean, listen, you guys. It's all over TikTok right now, but it just reignited my love of this one. So don't call me a poser, but I'm absolutely just like every other girl. Ready? Here we go. Raphael and I came to flow, deemed up by the Pope and a bone to the croak. I'm an MC shredder, but I get the feeling I should pass it up to my man on the ceiling. Oh, Michelangelo and I'm giant. I made David, but I slay you like Goliath. I'm a rap god and you can't quite touch me. This battle's your last judgment, trust me. I made it my business to concern myself with everything to do with Rhett and Link, like the years through like 2010 through like absolutely today. So when that came out, I was like, this is my jam. But the Smosh part is the best. Sorry.
Incredible.
Welcome to Recovering Gleek, a podcast for all of your complicated feelings about the TV show Glee.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome to Recovering Gleek.
Ugly podcast.
My name is Ian Allred, and I'm a Gleek.
My name is Lena Ganatsu, and I'm a Gleek.
I don't know why I feel so weird, because not 1 hour ago I was trying to self-tape and then hysterically started crying because I got so hopeless about it. You know that thing of where you just absolutely felt so bad about yourself that you started crying, and then you immediately had to watch an episode of Glee and then talk about it?
Honestly,
that's what I'm going through right now.
I was gonna make a joke and say no, but yes.
Oh my gosh, I literally Jalen was like talking me down, you know, he was like talking me down, trying to be encouraging, and then I just kept being like, and I have to watch Glee after this, because if we don't record the episode tonight, I won't have enough time to edit it.
Oh, buddy.
Woo!
Woo! Well, hope this is a special episode just because of that, y'all.
It is, because the Rachel and Kurt plotline hits a little close to home right now.
No. Oh, my God. Literally, I was going to be like, wow. Literally watching the episode, I was like, no one has related to this episode more than I have. But maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think we're equal levels. As always, we are Rachel Berry.
We are.
And this episode, I really was feeling my Rachel Berry. Yeah. Also, literally on the phone, Jalen said to me, you want things too much, which is something you need to work on. And my brain immediately went to the Rachel quote where she's I want everything too much. Yeah. Like, no!
What a nightmare. Yeah, I get that.
Shoo-ba-boo-boo.
Listen, I'm here for you, buddy. And I hope that talking about Glee at least makes you smile at least twice during recording this.
It's a nice reprieve.
Honestly, what if it's like a good, like, you know, post-mortem of your self-tape sesh today?
Yeah,
what if you feel better and more renewed? Yeah. Honestly, you and me both, we've seen each other through a lot of auditions.
True.
We've been through lots of audition trauma.
Yeah, that's something that, like, you know, we got all types of people listening to this podcast. Uh-huh. So, like, shout out to our non-theater peeps.
Yeah.
I don't think it is, like, possible to understand how traumatic auditioning can be if you haven't gone through it.
That's the thing, is watching this episode, I was like, this episode was tailor-made for me, you know, and for the theater kids.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh. Picture, like, a job interview,
mm-hmm.
except you have to be your most emotionally vulnerable in mm-hmm. this job interview.
You have to, like, put your heart on, like, a little plate and also poke it and put some salt on it.
Yeah. But then the interviewer the whole time just stares at you and writes notes and refuses to speak to you.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what auditioning is like.
And they, like, judge you for your body.
Yeah. And also, like, not just how you're dressed, but, like, physically how you look. It also plays a huge factor.
Uh-huh. And, like, the way you're dressed and, like, you know.
You better believe I spent like 20 minutes on my hair before that self-tape because I was mm-hmm. like, they're going to watch the self-tape and they're immediately going to disqualify me because of my hair.
No, that's the thing, is I work really hard on my hair because I'm like, I don't want my hair to be distracting. So it has to look good enough. You know what I mean? My hair gets really frizzy really fast. And sometimes if I don't like take the proper like steps, you can see it a lot in a ring light because my hair is like, you know, bright white and it's embarrassing. And I'm like, if I don't handle this, they're going to judge me because of my hay hair.
Ugh.
You don't really want to step to Da Vinci. Oh my God. Are you so excited to talk about this episode?
Yeah. Enough about our trauma. Let's get into Rachel Berry's trauma.
Let's get into Rachel's.
Let's hit up this episode.
But listen, first, we got to start with Nat, who does our weekly polls. The poll this week, overwhelmingly, mm-hmm. the result for the poll was that we're both going to like this episode. Ian, how did you like this episode?
So, I do have, like, some big issues with this episode.
Yes, so,
on first watch, I was like, I don't know, I think I'm kind of neutral about it. Mm. But then after I had, like, realized those issues and then watched it again, I can say on second watch, I do like this episode.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I got some big sore thumbs that I will be talking about.
Yes, absolutely.
But I think overall, I like this episode. What about you?
I feel the exact same. Well, there's like things that we certainly should talk about. Overall, this episode is a good episode to me, and an episode that sticks out is one that's like pretty special to me.
Yeah, honestly, straight up, I'm just going to say this before the Glax. The Kurt and Rachel plotline in this episode is mm-hmm. like so incredibly strong.
Yeah.
That it really does a lot of the legwork in making me like the episode.
No, totally. And it's like, you know, and look at who we are as people. You know, we're Rachel, like, Berry.
Goodness,
of course,
sakes.
We like that plot.
Yeah.
Like her from monologue at the beginning to the Kelly Clarkson song at the end, bitch, I am in for the ride.
Truly, truly.
Let's get into the Glax.
Oh yeah, it's time for the Glax.
So, Choke, that's the name of this episode, y'all, is the 18th episode of Glee's third season and the 62nd episode overall. It premiered on May 1st. 2012. This episode was directed by Michael Uppendahl, which this is the first episode he's directed.
Welcome.
I know. We're really excited to have you, Michael Uppendahl. He mostly did, when I look him up, it comes up with a lot of like Mad Men stuff and also American Horror Story.
Whoa, Mad Men to Glee feels like a big shift to me.
I know, but Mad Men to American Horror Story doesn't feel like as big of a shift. Do you know what I mean? Not that I watch either of those shows.
I know. I was like, based on...
I'm talking out of my ass.
Based on the media I consume that has referenced Mad Men.
Right? Absolutely. I'm like, based on my crush on freaking John Hamm. And this episode was... he writes another episode. He's written two episodes for the... directed two episodes of the show. And it was written by Marty Noxon, who also wrote... Extraordinary Merry Christmas. And this is the last episode that she wrote. And she also is very famous for writing Buffy, we love our girl Marty Noxon for that. Like, if you watch any episode, her name will be on the credits, I promise you. Let's get into these songs, baby. So, first song we have is School's Out, originally by Alice Cooper, performed by Noah Puckerman. And then we have the Cell Block Tango, originally from, I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's this little musical called Chicago.
No.
Chicago, Chicago, Chicago.
It's a city that's exciting. It's a city that's inviting. It's a city for a person just like me.
I can't do it.
Is that like the Colleague Michigan? They think I'm really fitting in the city is my perfect cup of tea.
Singing with you over Zoom is like when you put those headphones on that like try and make you feel drunk. You know, when you did Dare in sixth grade? Dare in sixth grade?
We didn't have drunk headphones.
You didn't? Did you have drunk goggles?
No.
Oh, man. They really tried to make us very scared of being drunk.
They were like, just take our word for it. I don't know.
No. We had drunk goggles, and then we would put the headphones on that would just, like, delay your voice. So it would just, like, freak you out and make you, like, slur your words. And the rest of the class would laugh at you, and you would, like, walk in a line with the drunk goggles on. Dare was wild, you guys.
Dang.
I know. Well, hell. So this little musical called Chicago, 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 performed by the New Directions girls. Unlike the original, which is over 7 minutes long, this version is just about 4 minutes. They ended up cutting three verses and additional parts.
I would have loved for them to force one of those poor girls to learn Hungarian.
I know.
Can you imagine?
I've seen like nearly every high school group do it where they just like have a poor girl up there learning phonetic Hungarian.
Yeah. If you did Cell Block Tango in high school, can you please tell us the process with which you decided who had to learn Hungarian? Was it just like the one that everyone didn't like? And they're like, you can be in this number if you take the Hungarian verse.
Honestly, I never have done this song ever, which is a huge regret of mine. Anyway, this is the third song that Glee has done from Chicago. This is the last time Sugar receives a solo in the show. And I bet you're wondering, Lena, she doesn't sing in the show. Here's the rub, buddy boy. She sings in the released version. What the fuck? She sings the Mormon verse.
Well, I mean, sings. She speaks it, right?
I know, but that's her last solo in the entire show. So each one of the girls is a different character from Chicago. Tina plays Liz. She does the pop verse. Sugar is Annie and Mona. Brittany is June. Santana is Velma and then does June's verse. And then Mercedes is the narrator, which like Cowardice, she should have just been in the freaking song. That's what I think.
I agree.
My thoughts early. But those are my thoughts on that. And then we have Not the Boy Next Door, originally from The Boy from Oz, the musical. It's Kurt Hummel performed with Brittany, Mercedes, and Tina. So I don't know if you recognize those little dresses, but those little dresses are the dresses that they wore in the Journey Medley in regionals. And they're very famous. And I thought that was a cute little callback. And also, like, so accurate because they certainly would have those dresses still. Mm-hmm. And they certainly would use it for something like this. So I just thought that was a cute touch. And then we have The Rain in Spain, originally from the musical My Fair Lady, performed by the New Directions boys. And then we have Shake It Out by Florence and the Machine, performed by Mercedes, Santana, and Tina. This is the second time Tina and Mercedes have sung a Florence and the Machine song. The first time was The Dog Days Are Over in Special Education. Brittany and Sugar are not included in the song, but they are included in the scene. So they participate in the performance, but they're not singing at all. So
Which, that's, I'm sorry, is wild.
I know.
Wild.
I know. Like, the way they just, like, look, too, like, longingly, like, they're just, like, looking supportively. I'm like, can they, like, sit next to Beast? Like, this is the weirdest thing ever.
Why do they have to sit on the stools in the lineup? And, like, could they at least, like, lip sync the shake it off, shake it off? Like, just have them lip sync the
That's
chorus.
What I thought as well. I would have bought that they would have sung along with the chorus, but whatever.
I cannot
I don't understand it.
I cannot imagine how uncomfortable it would be to have to like sit on stage next to people who were singing, performing for an audience of one.
Yes.
My
and like,
all-around
it's not like
worst
you have
nightmare.
A solo coming up.
No.
It's just like that. You're just here to keep the seat warm.
Oh man. Do you ever
for
like,
who?
Like, do you ever like have to be on stage in like a concert setting, you know, so like there's not like a story being told and you are not being featured, so you're pulling a Sugar or Britney where you're just sitting there and you get so in your head about like,
yes,
look like you're engaged but don't look like you're too engaged, so that like you're pulling focus but don't look bored, look like you're paying attention but don't lean in too far. I like I don't even know
like
what they're
listening.
Singing. Exactly.
I know, but it's like, you could just listen.
Exactly.
No, absolutely.
Oh, man. It's torture. It's terrible.
Honestly, and I have blamed that a lot on, I don't think, this is not something we talk about enough on this podcast, that I like did not do choir growing up because I didn't believe in singing in a group. So I never learned how to like, you know, especially in concert settings, like it's different. I feel like in like a theater setting when like someone has a solo and you're like an active participant of the story, that feels a little different.
Yeah, because you have like an objective.
My God, when it's a concert and you just have to be yourself listening. I don't know how to do that. I never learned. She's the ways. Anyway, back to Shake It Out. This is the second song that was sang to Beast while they were crying. The first time was Stop in the Name of Love / Free Your Mind when the New Directions boys sang it to Beast / their partners. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I love
what episode
that that's
was that?
A glacked. That was,
I know.
That was the mashup competition of episode 2. So what is that? Like episode 6 of season 2?
Yeah.
Because I think the mashups are always episode 6.
I don't know.
I think that's true.
What do I run a Glee podcast or something? But yeah, second time. It's weird that it happened twice. Jenna Ushkowitz revealed in her podcast Showmans that herself, Amber, and Naya recorded a version of Rihanna's Love the Way You Lie that the trio were going to sing instead of Shake It Out, but it was cut and changed last minute as it did not get approval. Jenna still has the recording. Isn't that interesting? And I literally the tone of those two songs is so different. And I wonder how I would have felt about seeing that song performed. So, yeah.
Love the Way You Lie does follow the assignment of the week that Sue gives them better. But I also hate that assignment. So, I think
we'll
I prefer Shake It Off.
We'll get into it yet. Dot Maria Jones considers this to be one of the most heartwarming covers on the entire show. And then the episode ends with Cry, originally by Kelly Clarkson, performed by Rachel Berry. Big guest star this episode, we have freaking Whoopi Goldberg guest starring as freaking Carmen Thibodeau. Can you believe this for a show?
And
she's an Oscar winner.
She's an EGOT winner.
She's an EGOT winner.
Yeah, she has won all four.
Pardon me.
This is not season 2 Glee.
No.
Deep into season 3.
Deep. We're
and
almost
Whoopi
finished.
Whoopi Goldberg agreed to be on this show.
Seriously. It is the most wild thing in my whole life. That is so crazy. This is the first time that Quinn is absent from an entire episode. This is because Diana Agron flew to France to audition for a movie called The Family, which she ended up getting. It's a really cool movie. She has really long hair and she beats a guy with a racket and she has sex with her math teacher. That movie is wild.
Woo, go Diana!
I watched that movie way too young. this is the first time that Puck has sang since Yes/No. It is the first time he's been featured in a song since Extraordinary Merry Christmas, which is interesting because Marty Noxon also wrote that episode. So I think Marty Noxon is just a Puck fan.
I guess.
I guess. This is the first time since the pilot in which Kurt sings a Broadway song that was originally written for a boy. Isn't that interesting?
Oh, like, my of course, gosh.
Like, when we talk about Kurt, we often talk about how Kurt, like, he's a big gender bender, doesn't like to sing songs originally written for men. He usually does, like, songs written for women. But I don't think I've ever seen it, like, truly written out that this is, like, you know, the first time since the pilot that he's done it. So yeah, I just think that's really cool. Yeah. This is the second time in the season that Will doesn't give the assignment of the week. The first was in Lady Music Week. That was the assignment that Finn gave. And this is the episode that Sue gives the assignment. Brad isn't playing the piano during Shake It Out. It's an unknown cast member. So super cool. This episode drew a 2.5 rating in the 18 to 49 category with 6.1 million total viewers. And that is the lowest for season 3.
Dang.
Yeah. The scene where Rachel choked came from a big fear of Leah's during the Glee concert tour. Leah claimed that she used to call the executive producer and she said to him that she was going to mess up one night and she was really scared to let that happen. So they used her real life fear and put this into the show.
Something they will do frequently.
Right? I mean, I've seen this show. This is the third time that something bad has happened to Rachel in the 18th episode. She suffers from tonsillitis and laryngitis. She broke her nose in Born This Way, and she chokes at her Niata audition in this episode.
Goodness sakes.
I know. The year parallels are so funny. It reminds me of how there is a date in August that I dislocated my knee 1 year. I got broken up with 1 year, and then I also got in a terrible car accident another year. It's like, what's that about? What's the parallels about, God? Tell me.
What is your life written by Ryan Murphy? My gosh.
Honestly, sometimes I'm worried it is. My final glact for you. This episode earned Dot Marie Jones, playing Beast, a primetime Emmy nomination for Outstanding Guest Actress in a Comedy Series. Woo! I don't know if you know this. Dot Marie Jones received 3 Emmy nominations during her time on this show.
Dang. Good for her.
Isn't that awesome?
It was season 2, 3, and then what? 4?
Uh-huh. Oh. I know.
Dang.
I know. Oi. And everyone who guest stars on this show gets wins because I was looking at that today. Freaking Holly Holiday wins. What's her face? Goop. And then Neil Patrick Harris won. And then freaking Kristen Chenoweth, I don't think won. I think she... unless I'm mistaken, I think she was just nominated. But the other two won, which I was like, she's the waves.
Dang.
Brian Ryan is in like one episode. Relax. But yeah, those are my glacks. Woo, woo, woo. Wait, I didn't do a glack song.
Oh, it's a recap song.
Oh, never mind. I don't know how this podcast goes.
Speaking of a recap this episode.
Woo woo! Good one.
Recap season 3, episode 18. All right, here's what missed on Glee. Rachel and Chris Niata auditions are here. Kurt takes a risk and nails it. Rachel plays it safe and chokes, forgetting the lyrics. After learning he might not graduate, the Glee guys help Puck study for a test to improve his grades. The Glee girls learn empathy after making light of domestic violence, only to learn that Cooter is abusive to Beast. Beast lies and says they've left him when they actually are giving him a second chance. And that's what you missed on Glee.
That was a short one.
This episode, it has a lot of plot, but the plot is actually like pretty basic when you get down to it. It's very easy to summarize.
Sure. Speaking of, how do you want to break down this episode, buddy?
Okay, we got the Niata hopeful storyline, which is our Kerchel.
I want to save that for last.
Me too. We got the Puck storyline, and we got the Beast and the Glee Girls storyline.
Honestly, let's start with the Puck storyline.
Good. Cool.
Let's get heavy in the middle, and then let's talk about Niata.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. High school is so hard.
Right? Like, these episodes, end of season 3, about them graduating, are, like, bringing up a lot of... trauma that I forgot happened.
I agree. And it also doesn't help that you and I both are living with our parents right now.
Ooh.
It's
living
like
the
not,
dream.
It's not the position I want to be in right now, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, why do you think I had a breakdown during my audition today? It was exactly what Rachel's going through, where I am getting to this point where I'm like, I need to not be living with my parents.
Yeah.
And so every audition I have, I am like, I'm like, I really need this job. And I get so in my head that I have a breakdown.
I know. My family is trying to plan a vacation right now in January. And my parents are like, well, can you go on this vacation with us? And I'm like, hopefully no. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, I hope I have a job by then. I hope I'm not living here. I'm hoping that I like can go somewhere and be doing something. Obviously, like, that's not up to me. That's up to like what happens with auditions. But they're like, we need a yes or no answer from you. And I'm like, it is fucking not that simple. You know what I mean? Which like makes me sound like such a brat. But like, I don't know. It's complicated. My parents are angry with me, but which also is like, maybe I'm just being a ridiculous person and like, maybe I'm never going to do theater ever again. And I should just be like, oh, I'm fine to go on this vacation, mom and dad. Don't worry about me, you know?
No, but that's the like, one of the hard things is you can't like super plan for the future because you're like, I don't know, I might have a job. Yeah. But then if I don't have a job, I'll be mad that I said no to this.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh. And then it's like you're just sitting around waiting for jobs and waiting for family vacations. Oh, my God. That's a whole different problem. I was not dealing with any of that in high school, I'll tell you what. But a problem I was dealing with in high school was getting my grades up, mother trucker. Let's talk about Puck.
Yeah.
How did you feel about the Puck plot?
There is a there's a sore thumb and then like a hangnail in this plot line.
Sure.
But overall, this is such a good plot line for Puck. We have not really had a Puck plot line in a long, long time.
Yeah.
And I just think that like this is a very genius way to showcase his character, and it feels very true to him and also true to like what a lot of teenagers go through.
Yeah.
Especially the conceit of like, yes, he might fail and not graduate, but then his reaction to it, which is like, well, you know what? School's for suckers anyway, so I don't really care. And it's not that he doesn't care. It's just that it is too hard to care. And so he's going to pretend he doesn't so that it's easier.
Yep.
I love this plot line, frankly. I think it's very, very strong.
I do too. I really love this plot line. Especially like, I mean, I just love the new direction so much. And when they support each other, I cry. So the boys being like, you know what? We love you. We want you to graduate. Mm-hmm. Like, let's like stay up all night with you. Like every single boy in the club.
Yeah.
Like is like, we're doing this with you. Like we're a brotherhood. And I just think that is so sweet.
That's something I love about this episode in general, which is one of the things that pushed me over to be like, no, this is a good episode. Is besides Diana Agron, because she was off, she was jet setting.
Yeah.
Every member of
this club. Robert De Niro's
in
that movie. Michelle Pfeiffer is in that movie.
Truly. They play her parents.
Yeah.
Dang. Truly every single character is doing something this episode.
Yes.
Like every member of this club has something to do. And I love episodes when everyone has something to do and no one is just regulated to like watching other people sing and that's it.
Yep, absolutely. Like everyone is like a member of the plot, even if the plot is just helping someone else along. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And even if they have, you know, like only two or three lines, they still like have an objective in the episode. They're not just like parsley, you know?
Totally. Like this sucks to say, but it's like one of Tina's best episodes this season so far, which is so interesting because Tina is straight up like just a member of other people's plots, but she like at least has stuff to do, you know?
This is no joke. The biggest Tina episode in 10 episodes.
Yeah, totally.
I was like, Tina gets a verse of a song and then she gets a monologue in a song and then she gets to like have fun reaction shots during Kurt's song.
Yeah.
It's the apocalypse. This is freaking Tina Geddon. Like she's a shining star.
I know.
Which like is so sad because like you said, she is at most like a C-level character in this episode. Mm-hmm. But you know, usually she's an F-level character. So like to see her at the C-level is exciting.
Usually she gets the throwaway lines. But you know who gets the throwaway lines of this episode? No joke, no joke.
Who?
Frickin' Joe.
True.
Joe has like maybe two lines. One of the lines is, "So how's Rachel?" Uh-huh. And the other line is, "I'm going into full-blown prayer mode." Mm-hmm. And which is so funny. Like an inciting question and then a like a stereotype like statement.
Well, you want to hear something. I think this episode, and I might be wrong, I think this episode is the first time we have ever seen Joe interact on a one-on-one basis with someone who wasn't Quinn.
Is that true?
Because he interacted with like the God Squad as a whole, but sure, like specifically Quinn. And then after...
He fully just speaks to Finn.
Yeah, he like sits down next to Finn and talks to him. And I was like, oh.
Like they have some prior relationship or something.
Yeah, like you're not just in Quinn's head. You can actually speak to other people. But
well,
you
she's not in this episode. He's got to do something.
Truly, they were like, oh, well, crap, that's his crutch. But you want to know what I think is the funniest thing on earth? Is Joe is just like such a cardboard cutout of a person. That when Finn is pitching his plan for how they are going to capture Puck, where they're like, they're going to get to the Schneider's pool, and then like Artie's going to create a diversion, and they're all going to grab him, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Joe is fully in the room listening to the plan, and yet is not in the plan. I paused it. You look at the diagram.
No way. No way.
Every person in that room is on the diagram, has a job. Finn fully forgot that Joe was even coming. And if that is not a testament to how boring he is, I don't know what is.
Listen, we've been saying it. It's just the truth, you guys.
He's a brick wall.
He is. Oh. Oh my gosh, that is so funny. But that being said, he is just an element of this plot. I love this plot so much. Mm-hmm. This is such, like you said, a perfect plot for Puck.
Yeah.
And like, I think like a part of the high school experience, so much of it, and I think people forget about this, is going to school, you know?
No, but truly.
No, it's true. We've watched this show about a high school, and so very few times have we ever been reminded that these kids go to classes. You know what I mean? Like, and to like show the perspective that, and I swear, at least as a person who like in high school had like truly what it was, is I had undiagnosed ADHD. So I thought I was stupid. So I like didn't know how to learn. So like having a character, and like so many people in high school kind of do forget about the classes because they come easier to them, which is fine. But then being so like grossly aware of the classes you have to take, it feels fitting that this is the plot we're getting about a class. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love it. And I just I love this. I love this plot. And I also love maybe this is just my like masochist brain, sadist brain. What's the one? I don't know. I love when people lose. I love watching the New Directions lose. I love watching Puck fail his class. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, me too.
I love when plots end like that because like not everything is a happy ending. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of the times studying all night long is not going to get you to where you want to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I love the structure of this plot personally.
Well, and also like, and this is actually a quote from Ian Brennan, who like was, although Ryan Murphy, you know, is who we think of, Ian Brennan is the creator of Glee in the sense that it was his idea.
Yes.
And Ian Brennan has a quote somewhere where he says that Glee at its core is a show about sad people who like have sad lives and are finding happiness like in this show choir. And so I do agree with you.
I love that. Should we get that tattooed?
Honestly, I think Glee is at its strongest when these characters' lives are sad and they're finding like hope in the show choir. Yeah. And so like to have Puck fail this test, but he got like so much support from the guys in Glee, and like to have Rachel completely choke on her audition and just like have these characters work so hard for something and for it to not pan out and they just have to keep going. Yes. Like that's what I want to see in Glee.
Yep.
I want to see these characters like struggling.
Because also, not to get sad, but I feel like that's how life works out most of the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, most of the time, I'm like, you know, worrying about classes like it's the end of my life, and then it doesn't work out the way I wanted to, or I'm worrying about this audition mm-hmm. like it's the end of my life, and I'm like putting all of this weight on it, and it doesn't work out the way I want it to. Because that's just like the odds of life, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, so I very much love it. That's a good Ian Brennan quote. Do you want to hear an Ian Allred quote?
What?
Beep, boop, beep, boop, beep. He's so smart and cool, huh?
Yeah. What are your thoughts on School's Out?
I love this number. It is so fun. I love these Rockstar Cheerios with all their fun makeup. I love this fun guitar. I love the flames. I love this. This song has like all of the makings to be a song that I love. So yeah. I love it. How do you feel about it?
I agree. It rocks. It is so punk. I also like it really fits the whole him trying to act like he's too cool for school mm-hmm. because he actually is bad at school.
Yeah.
My question about this number, I love this number. My question is, what is Glee Club? Can you just walk in at any time of day and people are already in there? And then just sing a song and then immediately walk out, because that's what Puck does. And it's very confusing to me. It's not.
It also happens so many times. Like, immediately I think of Who Run the World Girls, when Brittany and her like band of ladies yeah. come in and like people are already in Glee Club and then they just leave. And it's like, what is Glee?
Yeah. Like, is not everyone required to be there all the time? Is it like, you know, it's like a club, but then also sometimes people just eat in the choir room during lunch and they're just in there.
Yeah.
Like, what are the rules? Because people are really just walking into that choir room whenever they want, and they got yeah. a ready audience.
Well, I mean, if it is anything like my high school theater, it's that.
That's
I never ate in the cafeteria one time in high school, mm-hmm. ever, not once. I was always eating in the hallway outside of the theater or in the theater. And like I would spend like free periods there, like before school, after school, like all my free time in that room. So I assume it's something like that.
That makes sense.
I'm not convinced. And we've had a long form discussion on what Glee is on this show. Like, is it a club? Is it like a club that's also a class? I don't know. And I'm not sure the show even knows.
It's everything and nothing.
That's the thing. Because it's also the place where people just hang. And the band's always just locked in there.
It's also the place where you can be until 3 a.m. and campus security doesn't kick you out. What's that about?
Oh my gosh, that is such whack shit. I would never in my life buy that.
Like, no.
That is such wildness.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
We got in trouble for being in the building like past 10 o'clock. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that is cause for alarm.
Yeah, no, the McKinley High campus security is not doing their job. They suck.
No, totally.
All right. What are your thoughts on the rain in Spain?
Man, listen. I think it's fun. That's my main thought about it. I mean, it certainly doesn't even sound like My Fair Lady. I think it took until like my second rewatch of the show to realize that it was My Fair Lady and not just like a fun saying that people said and that they were like using this. So yeah, I think it's fun though. I think like, you know, I think it's fun. What do you think?
Well, I'm glad you think it's fun.
Because you hate it?
There are not words on this planet to describe how much I hate this number.
Oh my God, I love that. Oh my gosh, tell me like, all about your hatred of it.
First of
I
all,
just feel like it's fun.
This song? Like, first of all, doing a rock cover of a musical theater, like golden era musical theater song, is whack just in general. And then if I were to pick a song...
You're hanging out with the wrong bitch.
But like, A song from My Fair Lady. My first pick would not be Rain in Spain. My fifth pick would not be Rain in Spain.
Yeah. Like, it's also like not what that song is even about. You know,
that's
what I
mean? Other thing is that song,
like, their vocal exercises.
Exactly. That song is not about geography. It is tongue twisters to help her improve how she speaks. It is crazy. Oh my gosh. And so it's like, it is so dumb. I don't think it works as a rock song. It would be as if you changed, like, oh, gall. Like, if I can learn to do it, you can learn to do it from Anastasia and made that a rock song. Although I think that would work better, frankly. Like, it's so weird. Of course, it also has pre-recorded dialogue, which I hate.
By
George, he's got it.
Uh-huh.
I cannot abide this number.
Sure. And you know what? I hear you.
The way that these exact questions end up being on the test.
Do you ever feel like that? No, though. Hear me out. I remember distinctly taking a history class after being very obsessed with Hamilton and then swear to God, like, words from the musical ended up on my page. You know what I mean? And of course not. But, like, it was just, like, what I was consuming ended up in my test. And when you, like, you know, when you study really hard, it ends up being in the show. Obviously, it's not that simple when it comes to My Fair Lady in this, but I felt like that was accurate to, like, some study sessions I've had with Hamilton the musical.
And I see what you're saying, but the difference is Hamilton is a musical about history.
Yes.
And so, like, they are, like, listing, because I've had the same thing where, like, I've had a question about the Revolutionary War and been like, oh, I know this date because of Hamilton. This song is tongue twisters. It is exercises.
This geography teacher is a hack.
Why is, like, where does rain fall in Spain on the test? And why is it, like, what three regions don't receive a lot of hurricanes? It's so dumb.
No, it's dumb. It's dumb. I did think it was funny, though.
I'm glad you
hate it, though. That fills me with joy. Like, I definitely don't feel, like, all the way positive feelings about it. I just feel, like, pretty good. So I like to hear that you hated it.
I will say that the cast seems to be having a lot of fun.
No,
and
totally.
Thank goodness
and
for
you
that.
Know me. I love when people have fun.
Because if they did not look like they were having fun, this number would be so much worse. I also love that Joe has his guitar ready to go.
Yeah.
Literally immediately.
He knew this was going down. Puck guitar guys says, always know what's going
on. He does.
Down.
They always have that guitar in their hands ready. They're like, well, just in case Puck answers this question right, I got to come in with some sick chords.
Totally.
So I got to be ready.
That's why I'm always wary of guitar guys, because they're always looking for an opportunity to turn this this study sesh into a rock cover of a musical theater song.
I know.
And I can't hang.
And it's like, I really have to cram for this geography test. I cannot listen to you sing My Fair Lady right now.
No, totally.
Ah, dang.
Dang.
Well, we got to talk about
How did you feel?
Oh, go. Oh, yes, go.
What were you going to say?
You go.
I was going to ask you how you felt about Puck's dad.
Oh, I love that, personally.
Did you?
Love that. And I love how they bring Beth into it with Puck being like, I just saw myself in 30 years sitting across from Beth, and, like, I don't want that to be my future.
Totally.
I really, really like that scene. How'd you feel about it?
I like that scene a lot, too. It definitely, at first, I was like, this is so out of the blue and weird. But also, like, some people have people in their lives that are out of the blue and weird.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so it was like, I really appreciated that scene. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, and I don't know. I knew a lot of guys in high school who were like Puck in the sense that they had, like, these deadbeat dads that had, like, abandoned them. And they really resented their dads, but then, like, were dangerously close to becoming their dad, you know?
Yeah, totally.
I think this is, like, a very true-to-life situation.
Yeah.
And I just really like, I think that is a very honest way to have Puck have this heel turn. Yeah. To just kind of be, like, scared straight, like, holy cow, this is my future if I don't change something.
Totally.
Dang.
Revention, if you will.
How do you feel about Puck and his teacher?
Is this your sore thumb?
My sore thumb, frankly, is Rain in Spain.
This is the hangnail?
Yeah. This, I don't like. I am not like up in arms about it because it is Puck coming on to his teacher and not the other way around. And the teacher very quickly shuts it down. Yeah. And it does feel true to Puck's character that this is something he would try.
I mean, that's my first response is that like with the Puck we know is the Puck that sleeps with older women and also sleeps with his teachers. You know what I mean? So it wouldn't, I think it feels accurate that like he would be, you know, failing a class and would go do this and think that this is the way to get what he wants. Like, I think that's accurate. Did I like watching it? The answer is no.
I can't answer a hard no to that because it does have two jokes that I think are very funny.
Which
one is he says, Eleanor, can I call you that? No. And the other one is when he tells her about how he has admired her since she did that canned food drive for depressed Hawaiians. And she says, displaced Haitians.
He said, that's what I said. No, totally. That's the thing is, that's why I love Puck. The way that Puck speaks is just so fucking funny to me. Mm-hmm. Like the brovention, the give her a P-U-C-K so I don't get an F. Like, that is so funny to me. Oh my gosh. The way Puck speaks, I just die.
I think what bothers me about this, because I actually, like we said, I think it is true to his character. And also, like, frankly, it is kind of funny to me that Puck is like, no problem. I'll be able to seduce her without any effort and she'll give me an A. That he's like so confident in it.
Yeah.
What bothers me is that she's kind of into it for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I wish because it would be less creepy, but then two, I also think it'd be funnier for her to be so like, you're an idiot.
I agree.
Like immediately for him to come onto her and be like, are you freaking kidding me? And the other thing is, how is he allowed in this woman's class after that?
Yeah, totally. Like, I would immediately, if that was my student and I was a teacher in this situation, I'd be like, okay, cool. Let's chat about this. You cannot take my class.
Yeah, I would talk to the principal and be like, we're transferring them into another geography class. They fully came on to me. I don't feel comfortable with them being in my class.
Yep. Sorry.
Wild.
Yeah, I agree.
Dang.
But those are my thoughts on that plotline.
We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/AU.
Do you want to talk about we are talking about Beast next. What are your thoughts on the Beast plot line?
Certainly it is the most complicated I feel about this episode. It's not something that I even think I have fully formed an opinion about yet. So I look forward to discussing it with you. Like, overall, I appreciate that this... that the conversation is happening. If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that, like, the adults in this situation really are like coming down on the kids about like, you know, inappropriate things they're doing. So I appreciate that. I love Coach Beast. Coach Beast is one of my favorite characters. And I just, it makes me sad when they're sad. So, I mean, let's talk about it. How did you feel about this plotline?
This plotline is my sore thumb for a few reasons. One is, I agree with you that, like, I think this is an important thing to talk about and to talk about domestic abuse and especially, like, not telling jokes about domestic abuse and all of that. I just am like, why is Glee the show to talk about this? Like, Glee talks about some issues that I am like, oh, this makes sense. Like, they talk a lot about LGBTQ issues, and that makes sense, and they have characters that are queer, and, like, even on my
it's definitely their bag.
Yeah, like, it makes sense for, like, what the show is about and the place that these characters are in to, like, tackle those issues.
Mm-hmm.
This issue, yes, I think it, like, is a thing that needs to be, like, talked about in general.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I don't see any part of Glee Like, yeah. Glee is like a comedic satire show about a show choir.
Yeah.
Why are we having a plot line about like domestic violence?
Yes.
I don't know. It just feels a lot like Ryan Murphy trying to change the world,
yes,
instead of like Ryan Murphy trying to make a TV show.
I absolutely agree. And I think in this episode, we have two problems that are like, you know, Rachel's problem certainly is not exclusive to young people, but it is like, you know, getting into college is very much like a young person's problem.
Yes. Yeah.
And it is something that like weighs a lot on young people. And then we have this very adult problem. And obviously, again, like with the Rachel plotline, it is not exclusive. There are young people who go through domestic violence situations a lot. But in this like, you know, husband, this like partner dynamic, where this domestic violence is coming in, is a very adult problem. So it definitely doesn't feel like it has a space in this show about a show choir. You're so right when you say that. And like, I don't know. I think I would have felt uncomfortable if it would have been like, for instance, like a Mike and Tina plot. You know what I mean? Like if it was with the students. I feel like a lot of like the Coach Beast plots are very much like, for lack of a better way of saying this, like ugly girls can be in love too. And like ugly people like are not exempt from violence, which like certainly is, I think, a thing that people assume that like, you know, when like people are in, like there's so many jokes made at Beast's expense this episode that are like, you're so big, why didn't you hit him back? And it's like, I'm so tired of that, but I also appreciate it because like, I feel like I've heard so many times when like, you know, quote unquote, like not the standard of beauty people like have situations like that, that like, they're not pretty enough to go through situations like that, which is like so not the case. Like no one is exempt from violence. You know what I mean? So like, I feel so complicated about all of that. If any of that makes sense. And if you can catch my thought train.
And I agree that I think this plotline does say good stuff. And I think this plotline could work in Glee if Glee didn't also have like Quinn in a wheelchair because of texting and driving just a few episodes.
Yes.
And then Karofsky making an attempt on his life a few episodes before that. And like, it's just like, yes, you know, like comedic shows can tackle serious issues. But like when they're doing it every two or three episodes, it's like, what is the tone?
Totally. Oh my God. Absolutely. Yeah. And what's the tone of this show for sure? Like, and it's so like whiplashy from episode to episode. And I don't know. So yeah, all that being said, I think I agree with you that like, is Glee the space to talk about this? I'm not entirely sure.
I also think it's mishandled, frankly.
Okay.
I have a few specific points. One, and this isn't a mishandling, this is just like a personal vendetta. Just like, can Beast be happy? Like,
I know, it's God.
Same, it's the same where like, Ryan Murphy gets off on Chris Colfer crying. Like, he really loves Dot Marie's tears because
I do too. Her eyes get so blue.
The
like she's so beautiful.
The plot lines he gives to that woman is just like, your character is self-conscious and nothing works out for them.
I know.
Because like, finally Beast was happy and it's like, just kidding. And of course, like this does happen. Like,
yes,
of course this happens. But it's just like, can this character catch a break? But the two things that I specifically think are mishandled are, A, this whole plot line is about domestic violence is no laughing matter, and yet they still make jokes about it a few times.
And like, I swear every sad thing that is said, like a rebuttal is made, especially like about Beast, like at the expense of their body.
Like when Beast confesses that Cooter hit them to the girls and Brittany goes, did he break his hand?
Yeah,
and I'm
totally
like, is this episode not about how we shouldn't be making jokes like that? Like what the heck, writers? And then two, the part that I like literally cannot wrap my head around is this episode starts because the Glee girls are joking in the hallway because Beast has a black eye. And they're like, oh, what's wrong, Beast? Did Cooter hit you? Ha ha ha. Like making a joke about it. They don't think that actually happened, blah, blah, blah. The lesson they're supposed to be learning is that was so inappropriate.
Yes.
You do not make jokes about things like that. And then at the end of the episode, when Beast confesses to them that Cooter did hit them, Mm-hmm. Beast then says, and I have to thank you girls for opening my eyes to this. So then is the moral that they actually helped Beast by making light of domestic violence? Like, what's... It's so messy about, like...
I couldn't even make that work in my head, too, because I was like, first of all, we know that the girls were unhelpful in their jokes and unhelpful in their song choice. You know what I mean? Like, sent Beast out of the room very upset. So, like, no, they didn't help.
Yeah.
Was Beast just happy that, like, people were talking to them about it? Like, I can't even wrap my head around that. It is so weird.
And, like, if Beast had said that after they sang Shake It Off, but it's before they sing Shake It Off. So it's like the fact that you made fun of me for getting hit and then sang the Cell Block Tango really helped me as a person.
Thank you so much.
What? Yeah.
Huh?
They should be thanking Sue and Roz.
I know.
That being
said, great Roz Washington episode.
Do you love me some Roz Washington?
I mean, I say that about every episode that Roz Washington is in, and I will continue to say it.
No, there are some highlights to this plot. Overall, I don't like it for the reasons I listed, but there are many things in this plot I do like.
Yes, I agree. And I absolutely agree with everything you've said. Like, certain things are very mishandled, but there are some really cool moments, I think, in this plot.
Also, another thing that I'm like, what? Is the assignment of the week that Sue gives them.
Yes. I cannot even deal. Go ahead.
Lean and I have already talked about this because, spoiler alert, we're not doing this assignment of the week. Maybe we misunderstood what Sue was saying.
Yeah.
But from what we understand, the assignment is to take a song about a woman getting beaten by a man, about domestic violence, and then sing it, but make it a feminist anthem.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah.
Like, why wasn't the assignment, like, just find a song about, like, overcoming or empowerment and sing that?
And that's what the vibe I got from Shake It Off, but especially reading about them wanting to do The Love the Way You Lie is, I mean, the tones are so different, and I just think that assignment is so weird. And I ended up like doing some research about like just Googling songs about violence against women. And I just got so sad that I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, what is like difficult assignment? You know what I mean? Shake It Off is certainly like a song about overcoming, but that's not the assignment. That's not what Sue said.
Yeah. And like, sure, it would make like the reality of domestic violence like sink in with them, but also it sounds like traumatizing.
I know.
Like, there's other ways to get them to take it seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
It felt like the assignment of the week was just an excuse to have them do the Cell Block Tango, honestly.
Yes, I think that's true.
They just want to do the Cell Block Tango on this show.
You know, it's so interesting that they chose to do Cell Block Tango on a week that Quinn is gone and also not walking, and also Rachel is not participating, and they chose to not let Mercedes participate in it. Like, it is the six Mary Murderesses, and they have four girls doing it. Hello, what is going on in here on this day?
And they even keep in that line. They even say the six Mary Murderesses. Like, we can
count. And even in the released version, they only release like three of the verses.
Well, that makes sense to me because this song is long. And like,
why do the Cell Block Tango unless you're going to do all the monologues?
Well, hear me out. I love the Cell Block Tango. I love the whole thing. I don't need to see Glee's version of the Cell Block Tango.
I guess you're right.
Like, I don't need to hear Brittany doing the Alan Lipschitz verse. Like, it's fine. I don't need that in my life.
I don't need that much.
But I agree with what you said at the beginning, which is why on earth is Mercedes not in this number?
Yes.
Like, it is honestly like pretty suspicious to me that they didn't put her in it and just had her introduce it. And I mean, who knows what happened behind the scenes?
Yeah.
Who knows whose decision it was?
Exactly. And it that's my biggest thing is odd. Like, and listen, I'll say it as the plus size woman in the group. Like, is it fat phobia from like the execs? Is it because like Mercedes, like what's her name?
Amber Riley.
Thank you. Oh my God. I don't know anyone's names. Amber Riley wasn't comfortable with the subject matter or wasn't comfortable with X, Y, or Z. We don't know who made that decision. But you're so right. It is suspicious and gives me fucking pause. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd love to talk to Amber Riley about that.
But you know what I do like about this number? Tina gets to say a whole paragraph and no one interrupts her.
No one interrupts her.
Good for you, girl.
I know. And she does so good and she looks so cute. Mm-hmm. I love Tina.
Overall, I don't know. This number's fine. The like cutting back and forth with Beast, I feel like they were trying to do cough syrup too.
And I agree.
Cough syrup is so effective. And this number, I guess like it is effective enough.
Yeah.
I just feel like this plot line as a whole is kind of detached from Glee, whereas cough syrup felt very based in Glee.
Sure. I appreciate, all that being said, I appreciate, like, obviously not seeing the violence.
Yes, 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 yes.
I love that. I also love that, like, seeing, I really appreciated mostly seeing Beast in the audience get upset. Mm-hmm. You know, like, feeling very triggered in that moment. Like, I honestly very much appreciated that, and I liked that most of all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I also do like, just because, I don't know, I think this is a very real fear that people have. And also, it like, Dot Marie Jones just sells the heck out of it, and it's also just so sad when Sue and Roz ask them, like, why they didn't leave, and B says, because I'm afraid no one else is ever going to love me.
Yeah. Ugh.
Sad, sad, sad.
Oh, my God, I know. I also love when Sue comes in after Beast and is like, how dare you? We all wanted to leave. Oh my gosh. Did you also notice how tall all of these people are?
True.
Like each of these women are over 6 feet tall. And I was like, I love them.
Dang. Dang.
Dang. Dang. Like Sue says it best, a whole new level of preachiness.
Truly.
You know?
Truly. Truly.
Gosh. Well, that being said, we have the scene where Sue, we have the scene where Beast goes to the girls in the Glee Club and tells them the truth. Mm-hmm. And then we have the shake it out scene. How did you feel about those two scenes?
The scene where Beast tells them the truth was weird to me because I'm like, have these girls met Cooter? And if they have, why did they meet him? Because he just came.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he saw West Side Story, so maybe he like complimented them after. But maybe. The way they talk about Cooter, I'm like, I didn't know who my teacher's spouses were. Like, why do you know who he is? And then Tina's like, are you thinking of pressing charges? And it's like, Tina, not your business.
Yeah.
A very inappropriate thing to ask in this situation.
And that's just how I feel about Glee in general, is they have to have like all these, like, I swear every scene ever is like has these weird questions in there that like are just like par for the course with Glee. Like all of them giving context to how they know Cooter and then Tina asking that question. I'm like, God, Glee is so weird. Like no one ever speaks like this. You know, when like people open up to me about like their trauma, my first question is not ever like, or like my first instinct is not ever to be like, wow, your husband is a real ham. I never would have expected that. Like no one speaks like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So cute Glee. I don't love that scene personally, and especially with what you said, like where Beast is like, you guys really opened my eyes. And it's like, no, they didn't. No,
they made fun of you.
Exactly. And like, they didn't learn anything. And in fact, Beast opening up to them made them learn something. And I don't think the girls helped Beast through anything.
No.
But coming to Shake It Out. How did you feel about this song?
This song rocks. It's so good. Britney.
I'm screaming. I'm crying. I'm throwing up.
Seriously.
I'm throwing myself down a flight of stairs. Like, I am obsessed with this cover. It's amazing.
It's fantastic. They sound beautiful. Can you believe that Tina is singing on this song after she got a whole monologue where she was uninterrupted? Goodness sakes.
Oh, my God. Huge Tina episode. Big win. You know what we should do? Play the jingle.
Tina, they did you.
Fine, in this episode specifically.
Tina Cohen Chang.
Just with slightly altered words to reflect this episode.
Yes. Oh my God, I can't wait to hear what you do.
Of course, Sugar and Brittany being there and not singing is bonkers, but...
No, and like, you know what? For that, I'll leave it away. I'll leave it alone. And you know what? I talk a lot of game on this show about how I don't like it when this show thinks that singing makes everything better. Mm-hmm. If someone sang me this song, I think everything would be better. My skin would be cleared. My acne would be never again. My depression would be cured. My hair would be shiny. You know what I mean? This song is incredible. No, it is like so beautiful.
It is fantastic. Beast going back to Cooter is like, I get it. And I get why you did it. And I get that this is true for a lot of people that they know their ex is abusive and they leave. And then they just are like, oh, but like, I love them and I miss them and they get back together. Like, I get it. What is this show supposed to be, though? Like, a plot line about this person being in an abusive relationship and coming to terms with it and leaving their spouse and then getting back together with their spouse. Watch season one of Glee and, like, tell yourself that that's a plot line that happens on this show. That's, like, a multi-episode plot line.
Yeah.
It just is weird. Like, I understand and I think it's true to life, but I'm like, we're really, I just don't. I mean, I'm just talking in circles at this point. It's just a lot for this one show truly thinks it can handle every single issue facing humanity, and it can't.
Totally. No, I agree.
It's got to pick its battles.
Absolutely. And, like, Glee is so interesting because it was such a phenomenon that I think... it just, like, got so big for its britches and then just tried to catch up with what it was. And, like, it was a show that was, like, you know, more satirical than it ended up being. So they realized that their, like, reach was bigger and their audience was younger. So they felt this need to, like, you know, teach the world something. Mm-hmm. And in so many instances, like, God, this was like my first, like, experience with, like, so many things in media. So, like, I think that's such a positive thing in a lot of ways, but I also think that that's like a terrible thing in a lot of ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's the thing is, I'm like, I'm sure that a lot of people did learn a lot of good stuff from Glee. But I don't know. It's just like there's a balance in storytelling where you can have a message, but like the story comes first and the message serves the story. And the message actually comes across a lot stronger and more organically. And then there's the reverse where you're trying to get across like a certain life lesson and the story is kind of like kowtowing to that. And it comes off as so preachy, at least to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And like, where it's like, we want to like serve this lesson.
Yes.
Let's make a story for this lesson.
Yes. And like all of the Kurt and Santana stuff with like them coming out very much felt story character first. And those life lessons served the story. And so like they're so powerful to this day.
Yes.
Uh-huh. A lot of these like monster of the week life problems, like Sam's homelessness, God, or like Quinn's car accident, or Beast being in an abusive relationship, they feel lesson first, and so they come off to me as so preachy that I'm just like, oh my gosh, like,
yeah,
I guess good for you for trying to like teach people about this, but like, it is so just in your face.
Absolutely. And you're so right. When it comes to, like, especially, like, Beast not getting out of that situation, it's, like, what are children learning from this show? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, what is a young person going through a difficult situation like this going to think when seeing this episode? You know what I mean? Like, I with this lesson they're trying to tell and like the way this episode ends, like obviously this is something that takes time, but it's like, gosh, I don't know. I can't. Glee is so weird.
I know. Dang. Glee really tried to be everything, didn't it?
It did. And it makes me sad. I don't know.
Just some parting lines in this plot line that made me laugh. Brittany saying, I went to my first student council meeting and I found out we have another prom this year.
Uh-huh. I loved when Roz Washington calls, flies out of your hat box and then straight back into hell.
Yes!
And talking about Sue's baby.
Incredible.
Like calling her vagina a hat box.
And when they mentioned to Will that the girls were joking about domestic violence, and he's like, I can't believe that. And she goes, well, you better believe it, whatever your name is.
Yes. Oh my God. I love that part so much because it's like, I totally forgot that Roz Washington has not even interacted with Will even a little bit yet.
Yeah. And then also, of course, shout out to Bravo when they have Roz Washington say, you just watch what happens next.
Wow. Dang. I love it. Dang. I think those are all my thoughts about this plot line.
Yeah.
Are you ready to get into?
Oh my goodness. I was born ready.
Perfect. I mean, I feel so bad because obviously, I don't know, having these two problems in the episode handled with both of them so much weight feels frankly disrespectful to the domestic violence plot, which sucks so bad. But it's also like, God, this other plot was handled with such, I don't know. And maybe this is just because, thank God, this is the one I relate to more. I just, this show, I can't deal, you know, like having, I can't even deal. I don't know how to say it in words.
Well, I think you're correct. This episode has a plotline about domestic violence and it is like the C plot of the episode.
Yes. Which like, what the fuck?
Like what?
Yeah. I can't deal.
Anyways.
That being said, lots to discuss
about
all of that. But let's talk about the Niada plot. Everything about this plot is my favorite thing that's ever happened ever. From everything from Rachel waking up with her and her monologue, her like backwards elliptical, her backwards walking, her turning every single person into a metaphor that she sees and staring them down, her like working on her facial expressions with Finn in the mirror, her telling herself that she's a star to the end of the episode is just in, ugh. I can't deal. It's the best. How do you feel about this plotline?
This plotline, honestly, is near perfect. Like, I love this plotline. This is the Rachel I want to see. The Rachel who is, like, obsessive and weird and, hate to say it, doesn't succeed. Like, Rachel is so endearing in this episode just to see her as, like, an underdog who's going against opposition instead of just, like, an annoying girl who gets all of her dreams.
Yep.
And I just am obsessed with the concept of Kurt making this like risky choice for his audition and taking a big swing and Rachel being like, you're an idiot for doing that.
Yes.
This is the biggest audition of your life. You need to play it safe. And then Kurt's audition goes so well because he took a risk. And then Rachel, even though it's something she has been doing her whole life, gets so in her head that she chokes and the audition is a disaster.
Yep.
Like, that is some beautiful dramatic irony. I love it.
I love the scene where Rachel goes to Kurt and he's like, why the fuck are you talking to me? You said you wouldn't talk to me unless like X, Y, and Z. And one of the things is like, unless something happened to Liza Minnelli. And he goes, please tell me Liza's okay. Like, it's so funny. And just that scene of her being like obviously talking to him as a friend, but being like, I want you to succeed, so you have to play it safe and you have to do something that you know you can do. Like, I've absolutely had conversations just like this, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
With people where it's been like, you have to do the thing you know and you have to, you know, not take the risk or do X, Y, and Z. And then, you know, I just love that scene so much.
Oh, also, another thing I love in this plotline is this is how I want the relationships to be written episode to episode. Like, obviously, you can have an episode that is a big Finchel episode or an episode that is a big Klain episode, but like the day-to-day episodes, this one has such a good plot line where like Blaine is there for Kurt. He's supportive. Mm-hmm. He's mm-hmm. the one who gives Kurt the idea to maybe shake up his audition. Mm-hmm. But they both have plot lines independent of each other. And like mm-hmm. Finn is there with Rachel and he's helping her practice and he's mm-hmm. comforting her when she gets sad, but they have plot lines outside of each other. Like mm-hmm. these four characters are finally defined by something other than their romantic partners. And yes. it is such a breath of fresh air. Oh my gosh.
Absolutely. And like, obviously in high school, if you're in high school, especially, you know, the relationships you're in, I'm sure are important. Mm-hmm. But like more important is like your fucking future,
yeah.
you know? So like that's the story I want to hear. So I so appreciate that as well. And like the relationship moments that we do get in this episode certainly serve the plot, but they're not the entire plot. Mm-hmm. So I agree. I absolutely love it. I love the music of the night scene. Mm-hmm. I think it is so funny. Like, and when Kurt's like, something is wrong. We need like, I don't know, more candles. And then Blaine goes, oh God. Please, no more candles.
Yes.
Like, and then Tina is just so freaking funny.
Comedy queen. Oh. What's going on?
Where's her Emmy nomination?
Honestly, though, this episode does so right by Tina that it kind of makes me mad.
Yeah.
That I'm like, oh, so you do know how to write this character. You just can't be bothered. Because I, like, hear me out. I understand... not every character needs to be the lead character.
Yes.
And I think we should get Tina-centric episodes. But, like, you know, Tina doesn't need to be as big of a character as, like, Kurt. Like, that's fine.
Sure.
But, like, the way that she only gets one line an episode, all we're asking for is this episode where, like, she plays Christine in Music of the Night and is honestly so funny. The like disinterested facial expressions that Jenna Ushkowitz is doing are incredible. And then yeah. she has like a group plot with everyone else and gets to sing a little bit. Come yeah. on.
I know.
Ugh. Truly, Tina is stealing this scene in Music of the Night. I watch her the entire time. She's so
and
funny.
And that's why I love it so much. Mm-hmm. Is like, obviously, you know, Chris Colfer is doing the most, but like, it's Tina Cohen Chang. It's her scene.
She's killing it.
I know. I love it. And I love the idea that, like, the idea of having someone else in your audition is just so funny to me anyway. And the way that Tina would get such a featured moment in this Miata audition, like, honestly, I would give her a slot.
And also the way that, like, Tina knows this is the biggest audition of Kurt's life, and she literally would rather be anywhere else. Like,
I know.
She cannot
be
bothered to even pretend she's invested. So
I love
funny.
Her. Oh, I'm obsessed. Let's get into the auditions.
Heck yeah. First, right off the bat, bonkers, bananas crazy would never happen that Carmen Thibodeau, who is the head of the musical theater department at the most elite performing arts school in the country, would make a house call to Ohio yeah. for someone's no. audition for her program.
If anything, she would go to like I don't know, a big Ohio university and then have a bunch of people like
yeah.
gather.
And that's if you're Glee lucky.
So random.
Seriously, she went all the way to Lima to see two people audition.
I know.
My
Maybe that's
goodness.
What it was. She's like, oh, two people are auditioning? I'll just come down.
Seriously, she's like, oh, well, that's worth the trip. I've always wanted to see Lima.
I know. I wonder if it just like wasn't in the budget to like send them to New York for an audition.
Well, even what you just said, have them go to like Columbus.
Or
and
like,
there's, like
the place
a regional
where they had
audition.
The Miata hopefuls.
Yeah. Ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Ridiculous. I know. I love it though. And you know what? Auditioning, I have to like suspend my disbelief when it comes to auditioning with Glee because like Boy Next Door, would it be a good audition in real life? I don't think so.
No.
Is it a great audition for Glee? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like if I saw someone do that in an audition, like bring in three backup dancers and like, you know, grind up on the piano, like I would be like, something is off. But like this is Glee. And like in Glee, Carmen and Thibodeau comes to McKinley High and you have backup singers. Like mm-hmm. that's just the reality of auditioning here on Glee. And so I just have to suspend my disbelief. And you know what? When I do, I love it.
Yeah. I also love that Kurt was so on the fence about Music of the Night that he was fully wearing the costume under and had
I would do it.
Had Tina, Brittany, and Mercedes waiting in the wings. It's so funny to me.
I've done it where I've like gone into auditions with like two songs and then decided like seconds before I like hand my music over.
And you were wearing two jumpsuits and you were like, hold up. And then you took the one off.
You've seen me do it.
Yeah, incredible. And then I came in with two of our friends and I sang Baca for you.
How did you feel about Not the Boy Next Door?
I think it's great. I think it's very fun. I think it's very curt. I frankly, and like Music of the Night was supposed to be boring. Music of the Night was so meh. And I think it's just great. Like this song is so, so curt. I really enjoy it.
That's how I feel too. Like this song is so unapologetically curt to me. Mm-hmm. Like this would be a perfect college audition, like for curt.
Yeah.
And I just like, it makes me so happy. And he just does such a great job. And I think he sounds lovely on it too.
Yeah, it's a blast.
Also, one of my favorite Kurt performances, I think.
Oh, I think usually when I see people, I used to watch Glee ranking videos all the time. It'll be like every character's best song. And I feel like Kurt, it's always between Rose's Turn and Boy Next Door. Hear me out.
Totally.
I think Rose's Turn is better.
No, I agree.
But this is definitely a contender.
I agree. Well, Rose's Turn, I feel like, is so good. It just, like, doesn't compete with anything on
truly,
this show.
It truly transcended Glee. That number is incredible.
I saw someone comparing it to straight-up Bette Midler today. Like, comparing Rose's Turn on Glee and Rose's Turn, Bette Midler performing it. And it was like, which one's better? And I was like, I don't know, you guys. I'm going to say Kurt Hummel. Because it's not... I'm not going to compare it.
I don't have a lot more to say about this number. I just think it's very fun. What about you?
That's all I feel about it, too. I do love right before they go on and they're talking about how, well, it's just Rachel and Kurt backstage and Rachel's in her like Christine garb. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you sound better than anyone who's ever sounded sang the song sounds. And he goes, even Michael Crawford? And she doesn't answer. I think that is so funny. But that's how I feel about this song. I love it. I just think it's very special.
Speaking of Rachel, before we get into her audition, the logistics of this. Queen of costume changes. She is fully in a gown for Christine, crimped hair.
Crimped.
Sees that Kurt changed his mind within 45 seconds. She has straightened her hair, changed her dress, gotten into the audience. Good
and
for
not
her.
To like the same side of the audience as the stage she was on. Uh-uh. She's on the other side.
She ran
she
around
had to, like,
backstage.
Run across the catwalks or something.
Incredible.
I know.
Also.
Acrobat.
Like, yes, I know that after Kurt's audition, Carmen Thibodeau probably took a moment to write down some notes.
Sure.
How long did this woman take? Because Rachel Foley went backstage, had time to sit down in front of a mirror and give herself a pep talk before Carmen ever called her to stage.
Right.
Wild.
Honestly, Rachel, in real life, Rachel would be such a good friend to sit and watch Kurt's audition, a better friend than I would be. I would be backstage in my own world.
Oh.
I would not watch Kurt's audition if I was Rachel.
Oh,
I'd be
same.
Like, sorry, Kurt, I don't know what you did. I was doing my own thing back there.
Yeah, no, if I was the audition immediately after, I would be way too nervous. I'd be like, I need to be stretching or something. I cannot be sitting my butt down and watching you.
Totally. That's one of my favorite things ever with theater kids is like auditioning is such like an individual experience that like you kind of just have to go through your own trauma. Mm-hmm. It's like, I can't help you in this situation.
Exactly. Dang.
I mean, I hate that. I just call it one of my favorite things and then I hate it. What? Who said that? And then, yes, we have Rachel's pep talk to herself and she is like, Rachel, you're a star. What does she even say to her? I think she said something here about being herself, which hits so close to home to me. I don't know. Like, I have gone through auditions before where I have just been like, just be yourself and that's enough. And then it turning out to be not enough. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God, it just cuts my whole heart in half. Anyway, I love this part so much because I hate it so much.
Mm-hmm.
When she sings this song she has sung a million times and she just messes up the words. She gets off on the tempo and something is wrong and like gets shut down. Oh my God. She chokes. Been there, sister. Oh my God. It hurts so much to watch. Honestly, I get the most secondhand embarrassment because been there, you know?
Oh, it's terrifying. Yeah. I love this scene. I also love, oh my gosh. not to skip ahead, because I do have like some more stuff to talk about the audition, but I just love after it when Kurt comes up to Rachel at her locker and he's trying to like be supportive and a good friend. And he's like, oh, you know, like Carmen Thibodeau is such a bitch, blah, 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 blah. And I love, love, love Rachel's response and how she is like such a realist. And so the way that he's like, she should have let you start over. And Rachel goes, she did.
Yeah.
And then when Kurt tries to be like, well, I honestly, the beginning was so strong. I wouldn't be surprised if you got onto Niata based on that. And she's like, listen, Kurt, I really appreciate what you're trying to do. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Yeah, like totally.
It was the most traumatizing thing to ever happen to me. Like, I don't need to keep talking about it. And I just, I love that scene. Just like showing A, what a good friend Kurt is and how he's trying to be so supportive. But then B, just like, that's very, I don't know, like I've been Rachel in that scenario before. Mm-hmm. And been like, I understand that you're trying to make me feel better, but please don't lie to me. It was bad. I didn't get it. And I know that.
Yeah. I think this is some of the best acting Lea Michele's ever done in this scene. Just like her whole monologue from like her messing up the songs two times and her like, you know, putting her hands on her face in just sheer terror, like that she fucks up. Like it is honestly so special to me. I can't put it into words. I don't know. I've just been in this situation that is like the sheer panic and just like begging someone to give you another chance and like knowing that that's not reality. You know, so many times in life, like you get a chance and you get another one and you mess them both up. And you know what? That's life. You know, I just, it burns so much to watch.
Yeah.
Oh no. My God.
Genuinely, I think this for me is one of the most powerful scenes in Glee, as dumb as that sounds. It is like so real and so just like the way that Carmen Thibodeau reacts and where she's like, I already gave you a second chance. You're not getting another one. You should be more prepared than this. And like the horror on Rachel's face and oh my gosh.
But it also, it's so sad too, because it's like Carmen Thibodeau being like, you should have been more prepared. And it wasn't like even her not being prepared. Of course she was prepared. Like I have been in situations where it's been like, you talk yourself up for this thing for so long and you like tell your, and you like, you know, don't speak when you're not supposed to. I don't know. Like do all these stupid rituals and then like just fate fucking decides it's not your day, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just so frustrating. And I hate watching it on Glee. It makes me sad.
It's like that dumb thing where like in an audition, you obviously have to want it, but also a part of you has to not care. Because if you care too much, you're going to psych yourself out. And Rachel cared too much and psyched herself out.
Yep.
Of course, we can't not talk about the fact that Carmen Thibodeau leaves, Rachel's alone on stage, and the stagehands fully turn the lights off on her.
I would too.
While she's crying.
You know what? As a person who is Rachel Berry, I would appreciate it. I would appreciate the drama.
They were like, this is payback. You have been so unbearable to deal with these last 4 years. Guess what? You're crying in darkness now, bitch.
Yeah. But I'm sure she, like, I'm sure Rachel was like thinks back on it and is like, thanks to the stagehands who really added to my dramatic moment.
Seriously.
I love you guys, you know?
For real.
Like, Rachel is such a brat. I love after, like, because the audition happens, like, honestly, truly in the middle of the episode. And everyone kind of has to, like, talk around Rachel as well. And I love, I forget who's talking to Finn, but I think it's Kurt. And Finn's like, they're doing something called sitting Shiva. Like, they're like, her and her family are literally sitting Shiva about, do you know what that is?
I don't.
That is, it's like something that happens after, I learned this from an Adam Driver movie and then Shiva Baby, a Diana Agron movie.
Ooh.
It's specifically like when Jewish families have funerals, then they sit Shiva, which is like, they like, they essentially like, you know, sit at their house for like, I'm not sure how many days, but like, I think around a week, and they like don't work and they just like sit and mourn and sit with their feelings. It's like, honestly, a beautiful tradition, but like they're literally, and I just fucking love Rachel and her family, the way that they are like mourning this. And I've done this too, where you literally mourn it like it's a death, you know, like God, being a theater kid is so fucking annoying that you like mourn this opportunity. Like, oh my God, jeez Louise.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah.
You know what I love about the fact that you can't remember who was talking to Finn in that scene?
What?
It was Joe.
Is it?
Further proving that he is the most forgettable character in this entire show.
Are you kidding me?
It's
I did not
Joe.
Even set up that joke. I love that. That's so funny.
But yes, no, 100%. Gal, auditioning sucks. And especially like, I mean, you know, I did have a breakdown earlier today about an audition. But like the reality is I can do a million other auditions. Like there's no shortage of shows to audition for. But when you are auditioning for like a specific college, it is like it's one and done. Like, Rachel has built her whole, I mean, not her whole life, because what, we only heard about NIADA this season, but she has been, like, dreaming about NIADA this whole time. It's not just like, oh, well, another NIADA will come around. Like, no, this was it, and I choked, and I completely ruined it.
Yep.
Ugh, brutal.
Yeah. It is so brutal. I also feel that way about, like, I felt that way in, like, high school. I feel like this is how you feel in school about shows, especially. Mm-hmm. Because, like, when you audition for shows in high school, like, it's kind of like you have, like, X amount of opportunities. And if you don't get those opportunities, you're kind of, like, effed, you know? So, like, I just, like, God, like, that one and done opportunity is, like, such a teenage thing and, like, such a school thing.
Yeah. Also, before we get to cry... two things on my end. One, very funny to me that Rachel assumes that Finn is still going to move to New York without her.
Oh, I know. I literally put LOL the idea of Finn going to New York without Rachel.
I know, like, okay, girl, whatever.
Well, like, and then I remember he wants to go to Inside the Actors Studio.
And I also, I think it is like a dramatic pity party thing. Where
I've done it before.
Yeah, where you just be like, and then everyone else is going to go to New York. Yeah. My other thing is, I truly don't understand what this means. When Carmen Thibodeau is like, I already gave you another shot, I'm not giving you another one. She says, you get 8 bars. I gave you 16.
Oh no, I died. I was like, 8 bars?
That Kurt sang a full song.
I know. I wonder if, and I was like, is that just supposed to be a metaphor?
Yeah, I was lost. I was like.
I know.
Are you telling me that the NIADA auditions are supposed to be 8-bar cuts? Because what? Why didn't you stop either of them?
Martin Oxen, I have several questions.
And also, like, if it's supposed to be 8 bars, then great. Rachel sang 8 bars without messing up. Just go off those 8 bars.
I know. I do think maybe it was supposed to be, like, a metaphor. Like, like I gave you a chance. Like you got 2 chances. You know what I mean?
Yeah, honestly.
Because, like, 16 is... Is half of 16 is 8?
Is that like showbiz lingo that we don't know?
Maybe. Well, like, listen, you and me are not very successful.
I was going to say, we do not have many professional gigs under our belts. I would not be surprised if that's like a phrase people know.
I wouldn't be surprised. like maybe that's just something people say to each other. I'm not sure.
Do you have any other thoughts besides cry in this plot?
I don't think so. I'm just like reading my notes right now and then like... I just love this show so much, you know, like I hate so much of this show, but like the theater kid plots, I love, you know,
it's like, this is why Glee should stick to theater kid plots.
And isn't that so shitty that this plot means like is so impactful and is so beautiful. And not to say that I think the B stuff isn't impactful, but I do think that this plot, the NIADA plot, is easily the more developed plot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the plot that, like, these people understand the best. And, like, when people write what they know, like, they do it better. So, like, you... And then they're trying to cram this C plot in there. And, like, yes, put a C plot in there about Coach Beast. I love that. But, like, making the C plot about domestic violence, like, that's not the C plot that we should be doing, you know? And it's like, you're so right. Like, it is this the plot that should be on Glee?
Yeah.
I can't, and, you know, and I don't have that answer, but I don't think that this should have been the one that they used.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. Let's talk about cry. How did you feel about cry?
I don't have a lot of thoughts. I just like it is so overdramatic, and yet I fully understand where she's coming from.
No, I eat it up. I've been there. I've like been a full adult throwing myself around, crying my eyes out, like about, you know, fucking up on an audition like this, you know?
Like the lyrics just, is this what it feels like to really cry? Can I open my eyes? Is it over now? Are all like so overdramatic for the situation, but exactly how it actually feels when it happens, especially when you're a Rachel Berry like us.
Yep.
Dang. Wow. Dang. Honestly, first time in a long time that Rachel has gotten a solo feature that I have been like, this is wonderful. I just feel like Rachel's whole plot in this episode feels very true to who Rachel is.
Yep.
And is like very warranted by the storyline. Like none of it feels forced or out of character.
Mm-hmm.
Woo! Hooray for a good Rachel plot, finally.
A great Rachel plot, honestly.
All right. Well, is that our episode on Choke?
I think that's our episode on Choke.
Dang.
We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.
Doom, doom, doom.
Best part, worst part.
Boom.
What was your best part of Choke?
Best number. Goodness, probably Shake It Off. I just, you know.
That song's not in this episode. This Taylor Swift song?
Shake It Out. Oh no. Shake It Out, Shake It Out. Okay, yes. Shake It Out. Sorry, I'm so confused. Shake It Out. Shake It Off by Taylor Swift is my favorite part of this episode. Only certain viewers got to see it. Just Ryan Murphy's favorites.
Mm-hmm. Just Ryan Murphy's favorites. If you didn't see it, you're obviously not Ryan Murphy's favorite.
Truly. But that trio of voices, three characters who don't get to sing enough, I love it. Best part, I mean, the audition plot, specifically Rachel's audition, for all the reasons that you said, it is such a nightmare come true. And even if you have never had a choke on this scale, you have felt like it was on this scale, you know, like you have felt these exact feelings.
Yep, totally.
All right, what's your best part?
My best part, obviously the two things you said are like two of my best parts and maybe my best part, but to say two separate things, Not the Boy Next Door is such a shining Kurt moment. I love it. And then Rachel's monologue in the beginning where she is like walking backwards.
Incredible.
The way she is like not speaking to people. I just love that entire thing. It is quintessential Rachel to me and I love it. What's your worst part of Choke?
My worst part is Beast telling the girls that them joking about domestic violence actually really helped Beast and made their life better.
Totally.
What is your worst part?
I think my worst part is them trying to do a domestic violence story specifically about young people joking about domestic violence and then having the adults in the situation and every other person, frankly, every time something is said that is serious, rebuttal it with something that is a joke.
Yeah.
So what are we supposed to be learning here? You know, I don't appreciate that.
Well, assignment of the week was weird and made us uncomfortable, so we didn't do it.
Ooh, another line I liked from this episode is when Puck goes in to talk to the teacher and he goes, "I bought you some illegal fireworks." That was so funny.
Oh, I didn't even catch that. That is hilarious.
What a weirdo.
Wow.
That's our episode on Choke. Did you have thoughts about this episode? Would you like to share them with us? Good. You can send them to anchor.fm/recoveringgleek or to our email, recoveringgleek@gmail.com.
If you want to follow us on social media, you totally can. Our TikTok and Instagram are @recoveringgleek_podcast. Our Twitter's @recoveringgleek. You can also join this fan-run subreddit, r/recoveringgleek.
Mm-hmm.
Also, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. get our podcast out there. Get people listening, baby.
Baby. Next week, we're talking about Promosaurus. So get ready. Leave your gel at home. We're talking about Promosaurus. All right, y'all. That's your episode. We love you guys so much. Have a great rest of your week. If you're in school right now, our hearts go out to you. School is so hard.
It's the worst.
I know. Anyway, we love you guys. Here is a kiss on your forehead if you accept.
And here's a kiss from me.
Pleek. Pleek.
Everyone says that it sounds like she says pleek instead of please at the end. Frankly, I don't hear it, but I respect that other people do.
Oh, you're talking about in the audition.
Yeah, her last pleek. Please apparently sounds like pleek. I really tried to hear it today and I didn't, but enough people hear it that I think I'm the one who's wrong.
I'll have to go back and rewatch it. Pleak, I know what you're baby. Talking about now. I've seen that meme where people say bleak, mm-hmm. so I get that. I'll have to go back and rewatch it. All interesting.
Right. Well, bye everyone.
Bye everyone. Pleak.
Thank you for listening to Recovering Gleek. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at recoveringgleek_podcast. If you liked our podcast, be sure to leave a review and tell your friends, please.
I got a pee yesterday.
You got a pleak yesterday?
I got a pleak yesterday, and then I'm going to record the self-tape again because I'm what? A masochist.
Honestly, I believe in you. Should we do some affirmations here on the podcast?
Honestly, let's do it.
Play along at home. Ready, Ian? Repeat after me.
Okay.
I am powerful.
I am powerful.
I am talented.
I am talented.
I am attractive.
I am attractive.
People want to know me.
People want to know me.
I am lovable.
I am lovable.
I am worthy of working hard.
What?
I don't know. I was going to say worthy of work, but...
You know what? I'm also worthy of working hard, though. I stand by that one. And if you don't think so, you can find another podcast. Bye.
We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.